Safety words. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Now you can. Okay, so welcome to Safety Wars. Yes, I had the camera on the microphone turned off here. Sorry, folks. What did I do this weekend? No, change the calendar here. Putting together safety meetings for one of my clients, a painting contractor. What we do is we do all the safety meetings ahead of time for the entire year. And took me a couple of years to put it together, and we ended up, that's what we ended up doing, is everything for the whole year. We ended up doing it in a different language this time, English and another language. So OSHA has really been cracking down on a lot of... training programs. Now, we read it here in some of the news stories we do from OSHA. And we also I'm all tongue-tied. Tonight. Sorry, folks. Been up since 4:30 a.m. OSHA's been cracking down a lot on, companies will give training programs. And for example, they have a Spanish workforce and they do all the training in English without an interpreter, without a translator. And you have to watch out if you're a consultant to make sure it's in your contract. You're going to be giving all the training in whatever language it is, English, Spanish, what have you. And if there's going to be someone else there, there has to be an interpreter or a translator that is familiar with the language. So, for example, it used to be back in the day, summer vacation, you would have a lot of Spanish teachers or Spanish students. Let's say that they were studying Spanish in college or they were bilingual to begin with. You would get them to work for safety companies. Or contractors to help manage the Spanish people because they speak Spanish, and most of the managers did not. Things are changing now. Languages are never my strong suit, but I make an attempt. What I find out with Spanish speakers, if you're making an attempt, they'll help you out. They'll, help you out. They'll give you a little bit of leeway and everything else. As opposed to, let's say, German speakers, this is a real experience. I'm, right, Pulsel, German name and everything. We go over to Germany. It's about 1983, July of 1983, me and my dad. And we do a pilgrimage of sorts. So we went to see the orphanage where my grandfather grew up. We went to Davos, Switzerland, which I laugh about because who would have known that Davos would have been, for the World Economic Forum. So when we hear Davos, right, I know where that is. I know where they have the World Economic Forum, even though it's 40 years later. And what's even funnier is I was watching a show on Top Gear, right, the most popular TV show in the world at one point. And they were doing a race from, right, they did cars and stuff on that show. They're doing a race from the Channel to Venice through Davos. And this is like 10 years ago. I'm watching it, and the pizza place that we always were eating pizza when we were on vacation, we went there like 3 times. Guess what? That was on the show. I almost fell out of my chair when I saw it. Never changed in 40 years, or at that point, 30 years. So, you go over to Germany, and my father, who is a native German speaker, you know, in his house, I spoke German growing up. So he was, you know, but he was a little bit rusty, and he was picking up on it. We're there for like a couple of weeks in Germany, right? We're talking, and he's, oh, yeah, I'm good. So he goes into the a store, and he starts speaking German, you know, whatever it was. Now, I could speak a little. I used to be more fluent. And he says, and the woman behind the counter says, why don't you just speak English? Oh. And that's that way Germans are culturally. It has to be perfect. It has to be perfect. But if you go to any of the Spanish-speaking countries, any of the Spanish-speaking ethnicities, they're willing to work with you. They're, no, they, because they feel that you're trying to be respectful to them. They're going to be respectful for you. So, you know, what's my point? They used to get these people to do Spanish training, right? And nothing would ever turn out right, you know, for the people who really knew Spanish. It was not, they were using wrong terminology, wrong ideas, had no concept of anything going on in the construction world. And so what OSHA has said was, if you're going to do, let's say, outreach training, it has to be a Spanish language person who can know, who's familiar with construction, with the subject matter, if they're going to do an interpreter or a translator. The other thing is this. Let's say you have a 10-hour course, and you want to, and the trainer is English speaking, and you need to do it in another language, and you have an interpreter there. You just made a 10-hour course into a 20-hour course and a 30-hour course into a 60-hour course. So you, but with the new technology, new techniques, and some proprietary stuff, and people I work with, we're able to do it in multiple languages. All of these safety meetings. So if you're interested, 845-269-5772. We're going to be talking about turkey fires this today, right? So deep fried turkey, right? It's the if you are in United States, you know that this week you're going to be marking the Thanksgiving holidays. Right. So you're going to be here with the with the Thanksgiving holidays here. And every year you get, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there with this. And, right, there's a lot of stuff going on with turkeys. I mean, it's, no, and every year you hear in every town practically. Oh, you know, there's a turkey, you know, this guy burned down his house with a turkey fire. He brought it in the kitchen. He brought it in the garage. There was one story about 5 or 6 years ago where a work crew, construction crew, had just finished making their building the house, and they decided to have a deep fried turkey to celebrate and have, like, for the crew. Right, well, not unheard of. Usually, beer is usually involved in a lot of these things, at least back in the day. And they end up going, and they set up the turkey fryer, deep fry, in the house, in the garage. They burned down the whole house after they just got done. So, according to, I'm reading off the State Farm website here, and there are many ones. This is from August of this year. Tips to safely deep fry a turkey. Cooking a turkey in a deep fryer without causing a dangerous fire is on the menu this holiday. So this was in August. They got way ahead of the curve on here. According to State Farm, there are 60 injuries and 5 deaths and over $15 million of property damage every year from a deep-fried turkey. People are actually getting killed with this. So here we have, never keep fryers unattended. That means you bring the cooler with you, and you bring a nice folding chair, maybe a picnic table. Maybe now with the technology the way it is, you can watch the football game, right, while you're deep frying a turkey. Keep outdoor fryers at a safe distance from structures, off wooden decks, and away from trees. Yeah, that would be good. Never, oh, and by the way, if you're up here in the drought-stricken Northeast, you probably want to be extra careful. And this may be illegal in some towns. Maybe you have a ban for this. Never use fryers in garages. Place the fryer on a level surface to avoid moving it once in use. So make sure it's on a stable surface. Be cautious of the weather. Avoid operating a fryer in the rain or snow. Why? Because you have hot oil and you have water into it, and you're going to get a splash because you're going to disassociate the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and you're going to have a flame, and you're going to have you may have a fire, or it may be a popping, or, you know, spilling all over the place. I know I've seen a couple of people get scalded with hot oil. It's not a pretty sight. Be cautious of the weather. There should be at least 2 feet between the burner and the tank, meaning you don't want that tank to get hosed down with oil and then rupture, and then you have a blevy situation, and then it ruptures. You don't want to have that, or destroying the lines, the gas lines. Now you have a problem. Choose the proper size turkey. So that 24-pound butter bowl that my wife just pulled out of the freezer to thaw out, I said, look, it's Monday. Going to take 3 days to thaw that son of a gun out. So she just took it out of the freezer, put it into the thing. Had I known where it was, I would have taken it out of the freezer. I was shocked that we even have a freezer. I'm only joking. Typically, a bird that's 8 to 10 pounds works well. Now, this is the whole thing. Never attempt to deep fry a frozen turkey. Ice or water that mixes into the hot oil can cause flare-ups. Follow directions on the label to assure the turkey has been properly defrosted and is completely dry before placing into the fryer. Also, skip stuffing in the turkey before frying. Consider using a fryer with temperature controls. Continuously check the oil temperature carefully. Cooking oil that is heated beyond its smoke point can catch fire. If you notice the oil is smoking, turn off the fryer. Turn off the burner before lowering the turkey into the oil. This way, when you put the turkey in the oil and you have too much oil in the container, in the pan, in the pot, whatever we're calling it, it may overflow the oil. Now, you don't want it to overflow onto flames. That's a bad thing. So you do it when the burner is off. Once the turkey is submerged, turn the burner back on. Wear protective cooking gear. Put on goggles to shield your eyes and use oven mitts to help protect your hands and arms. Remember, you got oil on you. It doesn't come off so easy. It stays on you. It ain't like water. Keep protective equipment within reach, such as an ABC or grease-rated fire extinguisher. Never use water or a garden hose on a fire related to turkey fryers because it's going to cause the fire to spread. Keep children and pets away from the fryer. Once finished, turn the burner off and carefully remove the pot. Place the pot on a level surface and cover it to let the oil cool overnight before disposing. Do not put it down your drain. One of my buddies did that when he was when we were teenagers in his house. Bad results. Thank God his father was a plumber. Real bad. Opt for an oilless air fryer. These use infrared heat rather than oil to cook the turkey or an air fryer. You need a big air fryer for that kind of turkey. Wow. So, unfortunately, Thanksgiving Day is the busiest day of the year for local fire departments, who in 2021 responded to approximately 1,160 home cooking fires, according to the NFPA. If you plan to deep fry your holiday bird, keep the turkey fryer safety tips in mind so you can use the fryer and help protect yourself. This is over on the State Farm website, and what I'm going to tell you to do is to go and check it out. Check out anything with this. Be very careful with those turkeys. This is actually going to be our safety meeting for tomorrow on for one of the projects I'm on. Now, pardon me. Let me go to commercial break. We're going to pull up a couple of stories here. Make sure I'm good and ready because we're getting on to a very serious subject right now. And that is nuclear war, nuclear terrorism. I'm going to read some select things out of my publication that I put out a couple years ago. It's not in print. Last I checked, it's going for like $20,000 on Amazon. On the used book service type of thing. So, okay, let's go to commercial break.
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Posel, and today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So, let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. We're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. Proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning into Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we are back with this. And we're going to, for your Safety FM people, I apologize there with that. For whatever reason, the software did not kick in there for that. Don't know. It worked everywhere else. Okay. That's good. I went to a commercial break here because we're going to start up with our next topic here. First topic for you people on Safety FM was turkeys, right? Deep frying turkeys. You can check it out on the podcast, but be very careful with those. You can Google all the hazards there. So here's what we have. I woke up to this, and we've been dealing with nuclear terrorism and nuclear war threats here. So, now, if there were, when does World War III start? Does World War III start? Did it start last week when Vladimir Putin sent over a rocket over to Ukraine, proving that they have hypersonic missiles and that they weren't really set up for it over there? That was the moral of the story. Was World War III start when we start to escalate things like we did this morning with all the rhetoric and everything else? Where exactly does this start? Is it like World War I where Archie Fernand, I think it was Fernand, was killed? That was the start of World War I, and then shortly thereafter, I don't know. However, I think last week was a waypoint along the way, at a minimum. This morning I wake up to NATO calls on businesses to prep for wartime scenario. And this is not from something like, the other wars, right? InfoWars or anything like that, or some other alarmist prepper type of thing, which, believe me, I read a lot of them. A lot of them are very legitimate and everything else out there. Some of them are just looking for little clicks here, right? This is from Reuters. So Reuters is a pretty, I think, credible place, right? Top NATO official calls on business leaders to prepare for wartime scenario. This is out of Brussels. A top NATO military official on Monday urged businesses to be prepared for a wartime scenario and adjust their production and distribution lines accordingly in order to be less vulnerable to blackmail from countries such as Russia and China. And now, I'm going to say, not in the article, but I'm going to say this. Part of, and this is Hillary Clinton in 2016 talking, why she was saying this, I have no idea. Part of the, now we consider in this country a cyber attack to be an act of war, potentially. So this could also be cyber attacks also with this. All right, going on here. If we can make sure that all crucial services and goods can be delivered no matter what, then that is a key part of a deterrence. And NATO's military chief, Dutch Admiral Rob Bauer, in Brussels, speaking at an event of the European Policy Center think tank, he described deterrence as going far beyond military capability alone, since all available instruments could and would be used for war. So this is along the lines of human organizational performance. What is safety? Safety is not an absence of incidents, but a presence of controls, as Todd Conklin always says. Presence of controls, presence of guards with everything. That is what safety is. That's our definition. Hopefully the new administration will be adopting some of those principles, because the current administration doesn't. Right. Believe me, they have the information. I know for a fact they have the information. Now, so here we have creating capacity in our system. Disaster preparation. This article is about businesses being prepared from supplying things and everything. Now, in the event of a nuclear attack, that takes things up a notch. But we're more likely to get a cyber attack or sabotage or things of that nature than before anything with that. So just increasing capacity, very, very hoppish there, if I could say that. Okay, next article. This is one from the Daily Star out of the UK. I don't know how reliable of a source they are, but here we have World War III fears as a nuclear warning from U.S. government highlights area 15 minutes from disaster. U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency has issued a chilling guide on how to survive a nuclear attack. We're going to go over that here. As global tensions rise amid the conflict in Ukraine and Middle Eastern disputes grow more heated. As global tensions mount, the U.S. FEMA has released a spine-chilling survival guide. They issued this earlier this year, right? So I don't see why this is a this has become more and more urgent, but I don't see why they're sounding the alarm on this now, is what my point is with this. And let's see. Nuclear simulation, echoing Cold War era preparedness. The agency's updated advice aims to shield Americans from the horrors of a nuclear explosion. A nuclear simulation grimly tallies the death toll should Russia target the U.S., and the numbers are staggering, reports the Irish Star. So, I don't know. We're going to go over that guide here in a minute. Next story. Here, hold on, I lost it. Germany, bunker list. Now, I think if you, so Germany released an app, like a phone app, like on a phone, smartphone, on specifically where the shelters are, nearest fallout shelter. App plan for public to find emergency shelter in places, including underground train station and car parts. Now, I'm going to use a word that I don't like to use. Because it's a phrase, situational awareness. If you're relying on an app that's going to be instantly overloaded once it's needed, you're going to have a problem. So what I would do is, wherever you are in your local neighborhood, in your businesses, schools, what have you, find out where the bunker is, where a bunker is. In this country, you used to have, and I don't have it, the sign here. I have it up on my wall, fallout shelter, right? That's what we used to call call the studio back in the day, was the fallout shelter. But the fallout shelter signs we used to have in this country that they took down, that would be a place for refuge. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, Jimmy, I don't want to survive a nuclear war. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. We're all going to die. You don't know what your situation is going to be. You have no idea. Here we have, in another escalation, UK and France in talks to deploy troops to Ukraine over fears of U.S. removing support. That's when Donald Trump gets sworn into office. London and Paris want to create a core of allies in Europe as fears intensify that President-elect Donald Trump could withdraw military support for Ukraine. Britain and France are in talks to send troops to Ukraine and to deter Vladimir Putin has emerged. London and Paris want to create a core of allies in Europe as fears intensify that President-elect Donald Trump could withdraw military support from Ukraine. British and French troops could be among European allies deployed to deter the Kremlin from attacking Ukraine again. We're going to mosey on over to Voice of America News here. And, of course, let's do a share screen here. Gotta love these folks. Everything is wonderful. There are no problems. No issues. Everything is wonderful, right? Everything is wonderful, no problems. So I just read you those headlines, threatening nuclear war here. So here we have Trump taps America's first policy instance CEO to be agriculture. Scenario. We have forecast one of possible winter storms across the U.S., how a viral duct tape banana came to be worth $6.2 million. And then we have U.S. climate change regulations. We scaled back under Trump's EPA pick. Our local guy here, Lee Zeldin. Here, let's go all the way down. Biden to attempt Trump inauguration. By the way, he was in New York this evening and flew right into JFK during rush hour. Lovely for the people who were over there, from what I heard. And we're going down. Oh, nothing here. Okay, so we're going to go. All about America here. Oh, we got nice videos. Let's click on the side thing. Ukraine. Let's see what they have from VOA Russian and VOA or Ukrainian from VOA Russian and VOA U.S. experts analyze Moscow's nuclear threats. So here we go. From this is again, this is open source. This is VOA Voice of America. U.S. experts are casting doubt on the effectiveness of Russia's threat to expand the use of its new ballistic missile following publicly announced changes in Moscow's nuclear doctrine. VOA Russian and Ukrainian reporters spoke with experts, including Matthew Bunn, a nuclear weapons analyst and former scientific advisor in the Bill Clinton administration, John Earth from Erath. At the Center for Arms Control Nonproliferation, and John Hardy, a security expert at the Foundation for Defense and Democracies, about Moscow's announced change in policy. So let's see what we have here. Okay, it's in Russian. Okay. Wouldn't that be nice how we had it in English? Here. Okay. That's what we get, guys. I guess it's not a problem. Here. Right? I do this for a reason here, because nothing is ever a problem. Everything is wonderful. So let's try that again. Do we have any other things here? See the full story here. So this is what we're going to do. It's in Russian. We're going to go on over to, I would think VOA is like outlawed in Russia. I don't know. Just like I think they would probably treat it as RT over here. So let's copy that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into AI, see if we can do this. Translate into English. Okay. All right. And it's going to be in English here. So this is ChatGPT 4.0, a little low. On Dignity and Freedom Day, November 22nd, Russia struck the Ukrainian city of Dnipro with an intercontinental ballistic missile. This marked the first ever use of this type of weapon, designed to carry nuclear warheads in combat, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky stated in a video address. According to information from Ukraine's Air Force, the ICBM was launched from the Astrakhan region of the Russian Federation. Additionally, Russian forces launched aeroballistic and several cruise missiles. Some of the missiles were intercepted and destroyed, Ukraine's Air Force reported via Telegram. Russian military activity has intensified in recent days following reports of Ukraine's use of long-range Western missiles, including ATACMS and Storm Shadow. So we're going to scroll on down. Monitoring the readiness of Russia's nuclear forces is a priority for nuclear intelligence, says Matthew Bunn, a nuclear weapons analyst and former science advisor in the Clinton administration. As far as we know, they are in a state of combat readiness. Yeah. No groove, though. Right? It would be foolish for the United States not to believe that Russia could use nuclear weapons if it decides to do so, something we could agree with. Under what conditions could Russia use nuclear weapons? The last U.S. intelligence seriously considered the risk of a Russia using nuclear weapons against Ukraine was in late 2022 following successful Ukrainian counteroffensives. There is a belief that if the Ukraine reaches a point where Crimea is seriously threatened, perhaps with a 50-50 chance, Russia might opt to use nuclear weapons under those circumstances. John Erath, a senior policy director with Washington-based Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, believes it is unlikely Russia will use nuclear weapons. Over the past 2 years, numerous red lines for the use have been crossed, he pointed out. So basically, are we going to cry wolf? Are we going to... That's what you're suggesting here, with all due respect, Mr. Erath? Ah, they cry wolf. No problem. No issues at all. None. You know? Over the past few years, we've seen threats, both direct and indirect. These threats have been tied to actions like sending tanks, Bradley fighting vehicles, additional Patriot systems, and F-16s to Ukraine. This time, we're seeing a policy change on paper for the use of nuclear weapons. While it's an additional step in something new, it aligns with Russia's previous responses. The aim, halting Russian Western support for Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly threatened the use of nuclear weapons over the past 2 years. The aim of these threats is to intimidate the West, and Ukraine experts emphasize. Russia's policy revolves around consistent efforts to make countries stop supporting Ukraine, to prove Ukraine cannot win the war, and to ensure that Russia is allowed to dictate the terms of any ceasefire. John Hardy, a security expert from Washington-based Foundation for Defense and Democracies, is convinced that the West must continue to support Ukraine with all necessary means. I believe we should support Ukraine in targeting other sites in Russia, including by providing more missiles. This could involve steps like supplying JASSM missiles or increasing support of ATACMS to Ukraine. At the same time, according to Matthew Byrne, the risk of nuclear war is at its highest since the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when the USSR stationed nuclear missiles in Cuba. Byrne stressed the necessity of diplomacy to address these dangers. At the moment, there is very little being done to reduce these risks apart from deterrence, and more deterrence. Deterrence alone without diplomacy is dangerous. John, reducing nuclear stockpiles, a historic perspective. John Erath reminded that during the Cold War, the USSR managed to reduce the number of nuclear missiles by 80%. At the time, the governments of the U.S. and Soviet Union argued that 70,000 to 80,000 nuclear weapons were necessary to prevent a Third World War. Over time, we realized that number was too high, and reductions were made. Today, around 15,000 weapons remain worldwide. And I'm going to include on this, that included the disarming of Ukraine and South Africa Moreover, however, further reductions are unlikely given the current international tensions. Moreover, there is a risk of new nuclear arms buildup due to the expiration in 2026 and the new START treaty, a strategic arms reduction talk treaty between the U.S. and Russia. I've been doing this way too long, guys. Looking at this since I'm 9 years old. The last remaining arms reduction treaty. So that's what we have. So we have one side saying we have a problem, and the other side saying nothing to worry about. My question is this, and this is a serious question here, right? Are we really going to trust these people? We talked about the social contract last week. How's that working out for us with the social contract? That's not what my question is. Now, we're going to go to a quick commercial break again. So here we are, talking about nuclear stuff. And everything's fine. Everything's okay. That's what they said. Now, earlier this year, this is what we received. Let me do a share screen here. I'm going to be going to the other, using new software. Very, very near future here. All right, this is what we have, and I will be describing this to you people who are listening on Safety FM and on the podcast, Safety Words Podcast. You can also catch us on, we are broadcasting on Rumble, YouTube, our company Facebook pages, Safety Words. All right, and here. Yes, there I am on Rumble and on the other thing. So just check us out. Finally, you are figuring out how to do this stuff after everything else I got to do, right? All right. So this is right off of the... So they're saying don't be worried, but then they issue this earlier this year. All right, this is marked March 2018. However, it was updated earlier this year. I remember this. They promoted this whole thing here. All right, and So, be prepared for nuclear explosion. Nuclear explosions can cause significant damage and casualties from blasts, heat, and radiation. But you can keep your family safe by knowing what to do and being prepared if it occurs. What do we have here? We have... A nuclear weapon is a device that uses a nuclear reaction to create an explosion. Nuclear devices range from small, portable devices, we're talking about 10 kilotons, roughly. Fukushima and Nagasaki were like 19 and 21, respectively, in that range. A nuclear explosion may occur with a few more minutes' warning or without warning. Right? What do you have? You have a bright flash that can cause temporary blindness for less than a minute. A blast wave that can cause death, injury, and damage to structures several miles out from the blast. Radiation, which can damage cells of the body. Large exposures can cause radiation sickness. If I run overtime here, we're going to just continue broadcasting on all the platforms, Safety FM, You can catch us on the podcast on one of the other platforms at the top of the hour. Radiation can damage cells of the body. Large exposures can cause radiation sickness. Fire and heat can cause death, burn injuries, and damage to structures several miles out. An EMP can damage electronics several miles out from detonation and cause temporary disruptions and further out. Fallout is radioactive, visible dirt and debris raining down that can cause sickness to those outside. So fallout is the most dangerous in the first few hours after the detonation, when it is giving off the highest levels of radiation. It takes time for fallout to arrive back to the ground. Let me do this. Okay, make this bigger so Jimmy can see it. All right. It takes time for fallout to arrive back to the ground level, often more than 15 minutes for areas outside the immediate blast damage zone. This is enough time for you to be able to prevent significant radiation exposure by following these simple steps. And they have two of them. One, get inside. Two, stay inside. Three, stay tuned. And if I recall, back in September of last year, they were talking about this also. There's a PSA. So get inside the nearest building to avoid radiation. Brick or concrete are the best, and I'm going to tell you in the basement, usually. Remove contaminated clothing and wipe off or wash unprotected skin. If you are outside during the fallout, all right, go to the basement or middle of the building. Stay away from the outer walls and roof. Stay inside. Stay inside for 24 hours unless local authorities provide other information. By the way, your cell phone ain't gonna freaking work. Families should stay aware of where they are inside. Reunite later to avoid exposures to dangerous radiation and keep your pets outside. Right? Because the pets are gonna go outside, get radioactive, come back in, right? In there, right? Get dust, radioactive dust on them, then come back in. Stay tuned into any media available for official information such as when it is safe to exit and where you should go. Battery operated and hand crank radios will function after a nuclear detonation. Cell phone, text messages, television, and internet services may be disrupted or unavailable. All right, how to stay safe in the event of a nuclear exposure. Explosion. 1. Prepare now. 2. Survive during. And 3. Be safer after. So number 1 is identify shelter locations. Identify the best shelter location near where you spend a lot of time, such as home, work, or school. Best locations are underground and in the middle of larger buildings, because then you have more shielding, right? While commuting, identify appropriate shelters to seek in the event of a detonation. Outdoor areas, vehicles, and mobile homes do not provide adequate shelter. Look for basements or the center of large multi-story buildings. Make sure you have an emergency supply kit for places you frequent and might have to stay for 24 hours. Make sure you have an emergency supply kit for places you frequent and might have to stay for 24 hours. It should include bottled water, packaged goods, emergency medicines, and a hand crank or battery-operated radio. Now, if you could get a zero energy radio, the old ones, to wind them up, and they were popular around Y2K, if you could get one of those, probably the best thing. They're available on eBay. What happened was the people who sell the battery crank powered radios now, they did not want that, so they bought the patent, and they're not available anymore. Right? Those are different. Because you do not want a low battery like a wireless phone just told me. All right. Survive during. If warned of an imminent attack, immediately get inside the nearest building and move away from the windows. This will help provide protection from the blast, heat, radiation, detonation. If you are outdoors when a detonation occurs, take cover from the blast behind anything that might offer protection. Lie face down to protect exposed skin from heat and flying debris. If you are in a vehicle, stop safely and duck down within the vehicle. After the shockwave passes, get inside the nearest and best shelter location for protection from potential fallout. You will have 10 minutes or more to find adequate shelter. Be inside before the fallout arrives. Stay tuned. right? For updated instructions from emergency response officials. And here we have the safe thereafter. Immediately after you're inside a shelter, if you have been outside, remove the outer layer of contaminated clothing to remove fallout radiation from your body. So if you already have a pre-planned area, that means have emergency supplies, including changes of clothes, or that multiple changes of clothes. And if you're, you know, I would get Tyvek suits or something like that, something similar, the equivalent for that. But basically, take a shower or wash. I doubt that you're going to have, a water available. So you better have that pre-planned. With soap and water, remove fallout from any skin or hair that was not covered. If you cannot wash or shower, use a white wipe or a clean wet cloth to wipe any skin or hair that was not covered. Clean any pets that were outside after the fallout arrived. Gently brush your pet's coat, and to remove any fallout particles, wash your pet with soap and water if available. It is safe to eat or drink packaged food items or items that were inside a building. Do not consume food or liquids that were outdoors uncovered and may be contaminated by fallout. If you're sick or injured, listen for instructions. All right, all pretty good information there, right? So now, I'm on a roll, so we're just going to continue to go on a roll here. All right. So, a little bit of a respite here. Let me go here with this. So this is, I'm going to be reading right from my book. All right. Why did I write this book? Our government has neglected its fundamental duties of promoting good and resisting evil. I should probably issue a reissue this, right? But we'll see. Money is a deciding factor in every major emergency response and decision. Your life is worth more than a buck. And as we American citizens can evaluate our, and we as American citizens can sometimes evaluate our situation better than the government. Why should you read this, right? Should be motivation enough to protect your family and communities and be active in there. All right. We're not here for an academic solution, meaning, we have two extremes. We have one extreme saying they have studied the problem for more than anyone else and then endorse the litany of unworkable solutions. Sounds like COVID, doesn't it? Second extreme will feel that there is no threat. The government will protect them and therefore as citizens have nothing to do. The academic solutions will only impart knowledge, not wisdom or experience or anything else. Knowledge does not preserve life. Wisdom and taking action does. All right, what's wisdom? Knowledge plus judgment. All right? And be a leader. So this was written in fall of 2012, but it was actually written a lot before that. Here we have, politically, there are deep divisions in this country among the vocal leaders of both the left and the right. Both agree nuclear terrorism is a real threat. In this case, nuclear war is a real threat. And these are some older things, but they are, you'll recognize the names here. On the left, there is Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, right, lives on the other side of the river from us here, and was, when we first got married, she was like 3 miles away from where we live. Who gave a major policy speech to the Council on Foreign Relations on October 31st, 2006, stating, Iran poses a significant threat to the United States by combining access to nuclear materials and technology with support of terrorists, whose aim is to attack and kill Americans. That's gone out of control since 2012, 12 years later. On the right, there are several commentators, like Newt Gingrich, that have, and again, remember, this is 2012, Republicans were out of power. Newt Gingrich, that have been raising concerns about the threat of nuclear terrorism as far back as 1999. Mr. Gingrich stated that the Hart-Rudman Commission of the Council on Foreign Relations recommended that a government be able to respond to three nuclear events in three different cities on the same morning. Some also believe that a nuclear event will be a false flag event used to usher in a totalitarian state. Now, in the run-up to doing this, I attend a lot of public meetings on this stuff and everything. My opinion, and you know, we also have here a religious element here. And I would add today a religious and political element, where you have one side, and a lot of people, especially, and I've heard this in the blogosphere and online social media and everything, where people are saying we deserve to get nuked because of X, Y, and Z. It used to be the religious right saying that we are heathens, we are this, we are that, and we get extremists on the right. Not all, but hey, we deserve this. On the left, it's a little bit of a different tact. On the left, it's because of who we voted for in the last election now. We deserve that, and that's we deserve to be nuked. And it's also a depopulation agenda. You're just saying, Jimmy, that sounds conspiratorial. One of these days, I'll do a program on this, because there's been a depopulation movement in this world since at least 1967. One of my friends, political friends, has it mapped out to the 1830s here, 1840s with depopulation agendas here. And some people are happy that this is, we need a war to wipe people out, then we don't have problems. To what ends? I don't know. Some group of people feel that there's people who want to control everything. The other group of people feel that, hey, we just deserve it because we're evil. So my belief is that we all deserve to survive and thrive. Right? So with a nuclear war, very difficult to do that, depending on the scale and everything else. But I don't think it'll be a full-scale thing. I think it'll be very limited here, if at all. But the big thing is, with all these groups, is a lack of willingness to compromise. Nobody wants to compromise. No one wants to face that American pragmatism and be a pragmatist with things. Nobody wants to do, we want to demonize each other. How about we all get along? When did that happen? So, here we talked about this, here, right? Now, what are the immediate health impacts of a nuclear explosion? The health effects and dangers of burning and collapsing buildings, right? Tremendous heat, a fire, and loss of civil order is obvious and need no explanation. Another danger is blindness, right? With this. Now, let's say they're around, at least my social media feeds, because we know that they're programmed. There's a cartoon going out. Here, let me do the British cartoon on nuclear war, 1986. When the wind blows. Now, what I would do is go over to Google here, and you can look up When the Wind Blows. It's also on YouTube. It's a 1986 film, right? So this is basically where an ancient couple, World War II era couple, were living on an isolated cottage in rural Sussex in southeast England. Jim frequently travels to the local town, right, doing his thing, right? And at the time of this cartoon, anime, right? Adult anime is actually what it was. It was the time of the Soviet and Afghan war. And there was an escalation in the mid-80s, right? That we believe that we're going to be nuked. And I can't believe that I'm going to have a conversation with my children on this. I was well informed here. With this, because the day after tomorrow, the movie Testament we talked about last week, and some of the other things on the realities of nuclear war here, and how it's going to play out, we're not sure. Speculation at this point, even though there have been some studies. So this Jim Vlogs and his wife Hilda are in rural England, hearing a right and. They hear an escalation. Sound familiar? To an all-out nuclear conflict between Western allies and the Soviet Union. Just insert Russia today. Russia is embroiled in war in Ukraine, Soviet Union embroiled in war in Pakistan and Afghanistan. No, Afghanistan. What am I saying? Right? Hearing a radio news voice saying that a war may only be days away, Jim follows the instructions outlined in the government issue protect and survive pamphlets to build a fallout shelter, including covering the windows with white paint and readying sacks to lie down when a nuclear strike hits. Despite apprehension, Jim and Hilda are confident they can survive as they did the Second World War, and the Soviet defeat will ensure. So there was a protect and survive bulletin for civil defense issued in Britain. I've read about this. I've never read the actual document, but I have heard about this document with probably still relevant because this stuff has been pretty well studied for many, many years. So as a radio transmission warns of an imminent ICBM strike, the couple rush to their shelter, just escaping as distant shock waves batter their home. Right, thank God for the inverse square rule. They emerge after a few nights to find that all utility services and communications have been destroyed, but with a misunderstanding why their usual services are not functioning. With Jim speculating that most have temporarily ceased due to wartime measures, like they had in World War II. Jim and Hilda remain stoic and try to resume their daily routine, preparing tea and dinners on a camping stove, noting numerous errands they will have to run once the crisis passes, and trying to renew their evaporated water stock with rainwater. Fallout dust is visible in the air throughout the house. Jim believes that a rescue mission will soon be launched to help civilians. They venture outside when radioactive ash has blocked out the sun, causing heavy fog. They are oblivious to the dead and dying animals strewn across the landscape, destroyed buildings of the nearby town, the scorched vegetation outside their cottage. This is like a Twilight Zone episode, that one with Burgess Meredith. Their initial optimism eventually begins to fade due to prolonged isolation, lack of food and water, growing radiation sickness, and the absence of communication from the authorities. Jim is worried about an invasion. Hilda is basically dying of acute radiation sickness. And near death, Hilda suggests they lie down in the paper sacks. Jim is trying to keep everybody calm. Everything is good. Jim is now resigned to their fate and agrees as they crawl into the sacks. Jim tries reciting prayers, including Psalm 23, but forgetting the line starts to read the charge of the Life Brigade, whose militaristic and ironic undertones distress the dying Hilda, who weakly asks him not to continue, and then it ends with that, and with the Morse code signal, mutually assured destruction, MAD, right, which is the policy up to recently. Pretty scary there. With that. So, by the way, if you want a good resource with this, right, we had ready one pager. If you're looking to get in depth, if you can find a copy of my book, that would be a good thing. But if you can't find a copy of my book, which is highly unlikely because I got the last couple of copies here, go on over to do a share screen here. Hold on. Yes, I run everything here. I'm the engineer. I'm everything here. This is the official, and for years it is the official United States edition for nuclear issues. It's 317 pages. Takes a long time to get through. Very detailed. This was the 87 edition towards the end of the Cold War. Originally, Department of Energy thing, right? And you can get this. This is available for free download here. Now, Mike, the whole thing is here. Right, and this, well, let me back. I'll tell you that in a minute, right? The dangers of nuclear weapons, myths and facts, psychological preparations, warnings and communications, evacuation, shelter, the greatest need, ventilation, and it goes into on and on and on and on. Now, so let me do that screenshot again, right? Nuclear War Survival Skills, probably one of the better books out there. There are a lot of good books out there. But something you got to realize is that most of this stuff, if you're going to prep, a normal prepping takes, right, on paper, I calculated it to be about 2 weeks. Now we have a moving target. We have a target here, right? Things may happen from day to day. We see the escalation here. God, I hope and I pray to Jesus Christ that nothing happens. I pray that things go, are resolved here. And this doesn't happen. But as you can see, things are going fast. If you look at, remember from the movie, The Day After Tomorrow, it was like a 2 week run up to the situations. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go out, and as you're able to, because I know money's tight for a lot of people, prepare. For disasters. We dedicated the whole month of September for this every year. Prepare for this type of situation. FEMA tells you you need 4 days of food. Okay, go out and get, I think most people can get 4 days worth of food. We have Thanksgiving dinner coming up this week. Enjoy yourselves. If you believe in God, pray to God. Thank God for what you have. If not, whatever it is you do. Enjoy your time with your families. Don't alienate your family. But I think on a time like this, everyone's going to be shopping anyway for the holidays. Might be a good idea to go in and, you know, get yourself ready. Same thing, right? And let's not forget, there's one major supermarket in January, if this goes out that long, that does the can-can, right? Advertisement here in the Northeast when they have the, you know, the Rockettes there doing the can-can on the commercials. So this might be a little bit easier to get things because we have stores having stuff. They have 3 or 4 days worth of stuff. Water. They have like 4 days worth of water available with you. And that's about 2 gallons per person per day. So this is not unforeseeable here with that. If you have to get bottled water, get the smaller bottles rather than the bigger bottles. This way, if the smaller bottles get contaminated in one or two, you only contaminate one or two. You don't contaminate gallons and gallons of water. So that's the next thing, right? Is for the right, Preston Carney. Go and get the book. It took me about a year to really read that and to really give it, as Brett Sutton says, soak time. So here we have. Other than hazards previously discussed, the ongoing danger will probably be from acute radiation syndrome, ARS. ARS is caused by the exposure of high levels of radiation over a short period of time, over a large section of body, reaching internal organs. Immediate effects from nuclear explosion. Virtually all the people will die what is called the heavy damage radius. The light damage area outward poses better chances of survival, but victims will probably all have skin burns and later develop ARS. What are the symptoms of ARS? Nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. These symptoms start within minutes or days of exposure and may be intermittent. Extreme flu-like symptoms, seizures, and coma accompany virtually all ARS illnesses and may last up to several months. Skin damage. Skin damage ranging from dermatitis, irritated skin, to sunburn is normally always present with ARS. This is when hair loss occurs. Dermatitis may be intermittent and may take up to several years to heal. Mortality. Obviously, the higher rate the exposure, the less likely the chances of surviving ARS. Right? And going on and on and on. For survivors, recovery may take up to 2 years if you're able to survive this. So Here we have, let's see here. Okay. And we're going to go to commercial break because I'm on a roll and we're just going to keep rolling here. So we're going to take a little bit of a longer of a commercial break and we'll put in one of my videos here. Not videos, they were videos, audio, right? But you know what I mean.
Hey, employers, want to avoid hefty OSHA fines? Listen up, OSHA or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration can issue penalties after inspecting your workplace. If they find violations, you'll get notified by certified mail or in person. You have 15 working days to contest it or the penalty becomes final. How are penalties determined? It depends on your business size, the severity of the violation, your history, and your good faith efforts. Even if you fix the issue right away, you might still get fined. Let's talk numbers. A willful violation can cost between $11,524 and $161,323. Repeated violations hit up to $161,323. Serious violations can reach $16,131. And other than serious violations can also cost up to $16,131. If you fail to correct a violation, it's $16,131 per day. Lastly, missing a posting requirement? That's another $16,131. Stay informed, stay compliant, and keep your workplace safe to avoid these costly penalties.
Okay, we are back. And I wasn't planning on doing this. I'm going to be completely honest with everybody here. But here we are. We're doing it. Let me get the regular camera back up and running. Hold on. And all right, the camera just went out on me. All right, so we're going to do a share screen here. I think we should be able to do that. And this is right from the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta here. All right. And we got to unplug this. Okay. Yes, it's all here. All right. So here we have the acute radiation syndrome chemical safety card, right? I didn't plan on doing all of this, but I'm on a roll. I'm keeping going. Conditions for ARS. And now we're fortunate here in Rockland County, New York, because they just shut down the nuclear plant. So we have all these radiation stuff. We have good plans here. And what they have, and you can still see them, are monitoring points throughout our community here. So you'll be going down the road, and there's going to be a number 13, a number 10, a number 40. Those are monitoring points for radiation. So you're able to map these things out here in our area. So we know that they're doing pretty good here. So hold on. Let's do this. All right. So they're going to be collecting measurements. So radiation dose must be large, greater than 0.7 grays or 70 rads. Mild symptoms may be observed with doses as low as 0.3 grays or 30 rads. The dose usually must be external. Radioactive materials deposited inside the body have produced some ARS effects only in extremely rare cases. So three classic acute radiation syndromes. This is all from the CDC. Bone marrow syndrome. The full syndrome will usually occur between a dose of 0.7 to 10 grays. So 70 to 1,000 rads. Anything over 5 rads, considered your PEL. So this is a lot. So mild symptoms may occur as low as 0.3 grays or 30 rads. So survival rates of patients with this syndrome decreases with increasing dose. The primary cause of death is the destruction of bone marrow, resulting in infection and hemorrhaging. A GI syndrome, gastrointestinal syndrome. The full syndrome will occur with a dose greater than approximately 1,000 grays or 1,000 rads. At 10 grays or 1,000 rads. Some symptoms may occur as low as 6 grays or 600 rads. Survival is extremely unlikely with this syndrome. Destructive and irreparable damages in the GI tract and bone marrow usually cause infection, dehydration, and electrolyte imbalance. Death usually occurs within 2 weeks. Then you have cardiovascular central nervous system syndrome. Full syndrome will usually occur with a dose of greater than 50 grays. So this is higher up. Symptoms occur with that. Death may occur within 3 days. Death is likely due to collapse of the circulatory system as well as increased pressure on a confining cranial vault, I guess that's head, and the result of increased fluid. So you have 4 stages. You have the prodromal stage. Classic symptoms in this stage are nausea, vomiting, as well as anorexia and possibly diarrhea, which occur from minutes to days following exposure. These symptoms may last for minutes up to several days, a latent stage. In this stage, the patient looks and feels generally healthy for a few hours and even up to a few weeks. A manifest illness stage. In this stage, the symptoms depend on the specific syndrome and last from hours to several months, and recovery or death. Most patients who do not recover will die within months of exposure. The recovery process lasts from several weeks for up to 2 years. So here is a table here. You gotta love it. All right. Okay. So here we have the in a table form with this. And this is identical. The Department of Defense originally had put this out, and this is, now we could go into this here. So acute radiation syndromes here gives you everything. Basically, the bone marrow, which is the least one, mild symptoms may occur, right, at the lowest levels, 6 times the PEL. Basically, it's not exact. I get it. I'm going to get for our purposes, it's roughly the same. In most cases, bone marrow cells will begin to repopulate, and this is for clinicians. All right. So the LD 50 or 60, lethal dose 50, and the dosage is between 250 and 500 rads. So at 50% exposure, 50 to 60% of people are going to be dead with 250 to 500 rads. Gastrointestinal, right? And that is, right, what impacts your digestive system. The LD100 is about 1,000 rads. So 1,000 rads or above, you're dead. Real simple. It may take a couple of weeks, but you're going to eventually end up dying. Cardiovascular and central nervous system collapse is in excess of 5,000 rads. Symptoms are extreme nervousness and confusion, severe nausea, vomiting, and watery diarrhea, loss of consciousness, and burning sensations in the skin. Onset occurs within minutes of exposure. Stage lasts for minutes to hours. Patient may return to partial functionality, and no recovery is expected at this point. Now, what do you do with a cutaneous radiation injury? This is from the Centers for Disease Control, meant for clinicians, but we're sharing it here. ARS will usually be accompanied with some skin damage. It is also possible to receive a damaging dose to the skin without symptoms of ARS, especially with acute exposures to beta radiation, right? Alpha, beta, gamma radiation, right? Natural radiation, or X-rays. Sometimes this occurs when radioactive materials contaminate a patient's skin or clothes. Right? So, and this gives you the triage. secure the ABCs, right? Basic triage, airway, breathing, circulation, physiological monitoring, blood pressure, blood gases, electrolyte, and urine output as appropriate. Treat major traumatic burns and respiratory injuries if evident. In addition to the blood samples required to address the trauma, obtain blood samples, complete blood count with an addition, attention to lymphocyte count. An HLA, right, going on. Here, if exposure occurred between 8 to 12 hours, repeat, and, right, and assess. So initial treatment, comfort, basically. This gives you some medical testing here that I don't fully understand, so we're not going to go into it. And that's basically it.
Thing?
I'm sure you've heard the news. Safety training is evolving, and you should be too. Outdated safety training isn't just boring, it's dangerous. If your safety trainer is still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety from 25 years ago...
Okay, we're going to cut that off.
Hey, employers,
so
want to avoid...
basically, that's what we're looking at here with this. So I broke this down into simple things here, right? So from 0 to 100 RADs, no effect. And the RADs are going to be what they're going to be reporting this at. 100 to 200 RADs, nausea and vomiting. For 10 to 50% of this, ceases within 24 hours, right? And then you get up to 200 to 600 RADs, nausea and vomiting in 50 to 100% of victims. Cognitive impairment within 6 to 20 hours. We'll go through all of this here. I'm going to do this again. So now the thing is, well, what about this? When you start to get over 800 RADs, you're going to die. That's basically it. Pretty much you're going to die. Over 90% of victims experience nausea and vomiting within minutes and less than 1 hour. And as far as if you survive this, what's the latent period for cancers? Anywhere from 2 to 40 years. For leukemia, bone cancer within 15 years, thyroid cancer between 15 to 30 years, lung cancer between 10 and 20 years, and cataract formation in the eyes, 1 to 5 years. And that's all that's been documented here with this. We go into everything else here. Should probably do a full course on here. And this is where I'm going to end up here with facing the facts. We always have an opportunity to change course. That's what the fact is. Cooler heads and everything else that go into this. We deserve to survive. We deserve to thrive. Not only us in the United States, everywhere. Don't despair. We don't know how this is going to pan out. No need to be anxious. No need to run out there and panic. What I'm going to tell you is don't get lulled into a sense of complacency. Go out there. Live your life happily. Enjoy your family this week. It's a holiday week. Prepare, because guess what? You're already going to be in the supermarket preparing for that turkey or whatever you prefer on Thursday. And that's what's going on. I'm going to be not broadcasting tomorrow. We will be back on Wednesday and possibly Thursday with this. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. Sorry about the camera issues here for you folks watching me on the platforms. We are going to finish, and if you're new to the program, we always finish with patriotic music at the end, usually from the United States, but sometimes other countries too, depending on the news. We'll see you back later on.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.